From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports on Governor Cuomo's address to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on Cuomo's speech and convention politics, and a corruption probe by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara extends to Westchester County. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo got his moment on the convention stage this week before Hillary Clinton made her acceptance speech for the nomination for president. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Cuomo delivered his speech before the primetime programming began, around 7:30 p.m., and he started the speech by mentioning his father and Mario Cuomo's famous 1984 Tale of Two Cities speech at the San Francisco Convention 32 years ago. Cuomo says the issues his father named as a counterpoint to then-President Ronald Reagan's philosophy of government resonate again today, but he says this time it's the very soul of America that is at stake, and he accused Republicans of capitalizing on fear of immigrants and of people who are different from them.
Fear is not strength. Fear is weakness. And no matter how loud you yell, our America is never weak.
Cuomo then went on to list his accomplishments, including raising the minimum wage in New York and enacting paid family leave and marriage equality and banning hydrofracking. Finally, he turned to his party's presidential nominee, Hillary Clinton, saying he spent 8 years in her husband, President Bill Clinton's administration, and worked with her when she was senator. He says Hillary Clinton is a unifying force.
She won't just shatter the glass ceiling for my daughters and your daughters and provide a new role model for an entire new generation of women. She also has the vision and qualifications to be a transformative force for this nation.
The speech capped 3 days of events at the DNC for Cuomo, who also spoke to labor and gay rights groups. In Philadelphia, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, well, certainly a major week for the Democrats in Philadelphia at the National Convention. Your thoughts on conventions in general? You've been there for many of these, and you commented earlier in the week that many of the speeches were a lot more interesting than you were used to.
That's right. I think the Democrats did a very good job of orchestrating this. And some of the speakers really just were very, very powerful. One thing that did seem clear to me is that in the semi-primetime speeches, which were very effective, I thought, the audience was looking at the speakers, reacting to the speakers, as opposed to this, you know, hubbub that went on. I know that when Mario Cuomo gave his famous speech, there was an absolute insistence on the Cuomo's part that the lights be turned out in the auditorium so that people would concentrate on the speeches. This time, things really seemed to be organized, and when people came out, you know, in that 7 to 8, 8 to 9 time, there was tremendous respect for the people who were speaking and giving their messages. when Gabby Giffords came out, I had a tear in my eye. I thought that this was one of the most effective things that I have ever seen. So I think from start to finish, the Democrats knew what they were doing in making this thing happen. The other thing that was so interesting to me, David, was that they really did go after Trump directly. There was no my opponent, that kind of thing. Now, they talked about Donald Trump and what a risk he was, that he shouldn't have his hand on the nuclear button, said Hillary, that if you couldn't trust him with his tweets, how could you trust him with this nuclear capacity? So I think they did very well. What we'll have to see now is whether she gets the same bump after her convention that Donald Trump did after his.
Andrew Cuomo's moment on the stage, not in prime time, but certainly got a positive response.
There's no problem with what he said. He was smart enough to refer to his father in glowing terms. I think there's a real nostalgia for the father, for Mario, who I worked with for all of those years, you know, on the Me and Mario program. But the newspapers are making much of the fact that he did not mention Hillary Clinton until 13 minutes into his speech. And most of the speech was credit claiming, I did, I did, I did. Look, everybody knows that the people around Andrew Cuomo have been subpoenaed, that there is an ongoing investigation. This was a very important moment for him. I think he did fine.
I keep thinking, Alan, of the debate that New York U.S. Senate candidate Hillary Clinton had with Rick Lazio, in which Lazio approached her on the stage and caused a kerfuffle. Is that possible with a guy like Trump on a stage with Clinton at a debate?
Look, anybody who underestimates Trump is just looking for trouble. This is a guy who has done extremely well against all of the odds. He gets to be the nominee. The entire Republican establishment, it would seem, comes out against him. Two Republican presidents don't show up at the convention. Now, will he stand up in a debate? Will Donald Trump play the bully with Hillary Clinton? Well, he better not, because if he does, it's going to give her an opportunity to really show her stuff, as it did with the old Rick Lazio debate that we've all become so familiar with. I think he's just too smart. He'll try to beat her up on substance, but I don't think he'll do anything that stupid. But then again, you know, we have seen him do some things that have really riled many people. But then again, the polls are showing him to be right up there with her, and it's going to be a very close race.
While the Democrats called for unity among their own party and, of course, the country, the New York Democrats, Governor Andrew Cuomo and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's frayed relationship was exposed to all in a sort of competition over who got the better spot.
Well, that's right. Cuomo kept claiming that he was getting the better spot because he was on the same night with Hillary Clinton. It is interesting that he used his time to talk about and to buttress himself and to talk about how well he had done as governor with some of his major economic accomplishments, and that these things were what made his governorship. It's almost as if he was seeing Mario, his father, who he clearly loves and respects, as a dreamer and himself as a doer. And as I say, the idea that he did not mention Hillary Clinton, the candidate, until 13 minutes into the speech was certainly not lost on the reporters who were covering the convention and writing about it. It was classic Cuomo, the fact that he talked about himself and much less about Clinton.
You spoke this week with New York Times Albany bureau chief Jesse McKinley. One of the discussions you had was regarding the issue of Preet Bharara. Now, there are appeals are going on for Skelos and Silver, and there's some question as to whether those will hold up after a Supreme Court decision. McKinley seemed to suggest Preet wouldn't be going anywhere.
Well, you know, I am a huge fan, as everybody knows, of Preet Bharara. And then there have been those who suggest that if these Supreme Court decisions go south for Preet Bharara and the convictions of Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos, that Bharara would be severely damaged. Jesse McKinley of the New York Times, a very respected voice in Albany, made it clear he didn't think it would hurt him at all. And I agree with that. Bharara is going to get a lot of credit no matter what happens for having finally been the one guy who takes on the system.
You also spoke about the relationship between the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and the governor.
Well, one of the great things that has really perplexed me, David, is the idea that Schneiderman was brought in on the Moreland Act. We remember that commission that went so bad for Cuomo, and he said to each of the people who were on the commission that you'll be assistant attorney generals, therefore you can go look at everything, including the legislature. Then when Cuomo disbanded the Moreland Act Commission, probably the darkest mark on him, there was no mention of Schneiderman. He totally embarrassed the guy. If there were partners when they set up the commission, then how come he said, it's my commission, I can do anything I want with it? That's got to have led to some bad blood between the two men. I think they're wary of each other. I think Schneiderman, who is what we call the AG or almost governor, obviously knows that Andrew Cuomo doesn't play well with political rivals. That has certainly been true with de Blasio. I think de Blasio has suffered a great deal from it. I think Cuomo has suffered a great deal from it. Neither man looks like they emerged from this pit fight with any kind of dignity.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A corruption probe being conducted by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara has extended to Westchester County. That's according to a report earlier this week in the New York Post. Now Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino is responding. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The July 25th New York Post article says the newspaper has learned that U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara's corruption probe into two donors to New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has tentacles into Westchester. Republican Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino confirmed his office was subpoenaed.
We were subpoenaed, which is not unusual. They asked for things that we turned over right away, typical informational stuff. And so they've had that, and, they're going to do whatever they're going to do.
Astorino, a Republican who ran for governor in 2014, says his office turned over this information, including emails and phone records, in May. The subpoenas reportedly are in relation to donors Jonah Rechnitz and Jeremy Reichberg.
I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not concerned about that. This is an investigation that is necessary because, unfortunately, out of the 13,000 donors that we have, two may have done something wrong in New York City and elsewhere, and because it touched us, we've got to go through this, and that's okay. That's part of the process.
The Post reports that Reichberg, a Brooklyn resident with no known previous ties to Westchester County, was named a volunteer county police chaplain in June 2013, and that a few days later, entities tied to Rechnitz donated $25,000 to Astorino's reelection campaign. Again, Astorino.
Everything was done above board. Everything was put on our financial disclosure forms, as it should be. And so, as far as we're concerned, everything was done the right way and legally. And this is a process that, we have to go through, and we will. But everything that we were asked to turn over, we did.
Political scientist Dr. Gerald Benjamin of SUNY New Paltz says the issue seems to be more with the donors than the county executive.
They're following the donor path. And it stands to reason that people who would seek influence through donations in one locality would probably try to seek that same influence in other localities. It doesn't assure that they have achieved that, but it stands to reason that that technique would be used by them widely.
Bharara, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, spoke earlier this year with WAMC's Dr. Alan Chartok addressing corruption in general.
In recent times, the New York legislature has been marked by regular bribery, rampant kickbacks, and a rancid culture. Recent events paint a portrait of the show-me-the-money culture in the worst possible way. It continues, by the way, to be a bipartisan affair, Republican and Democrat, in the Assembly and in the Senate, upstate and downstate.
Meanwhile, Astorino describes the two donors when he met them.
Just typical as any donor would be, supported our cause and just like the other 13,000 people did. Look, if I knew then what we know now, I wouldn't have sat down with them ever.
Astorino says he knew nothing about the donor's connection to de Blasio, a Democrat, besides the following.
I did know that they had supported him. But other than that, our donors support a lot of different people, so.
Astorino says he returned the money via charity. He was speaking in Croton on Hudson.
You know, the money that we received from that gentleman, we have already given back to charity. That was in 2013, so that money had actually been spent in that campaign. So rather than return it to him, I thought it'd be better to give it to charity, which we did. We gave, I think, $5,000 to the Hudson Valley Honor Flight, some to domestic violence organizations, and the like. So, you know, I felt very strongly that that money should be returned.
Astorino is contemplating another run for governor in 2018.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
The New York State Gaming Commission met this week in Schenectady. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports they discussed horse racing and casino gambling before heading off to tour the under-construction Rivers Casino.
During a regularly scheduled meeting, board members discussed various rules and regulations pertaining to horse racing. One will allow topical DMSO, an anti-inflammatory drug, to be applied to a horse on race day. A ban remains on giving DMSO orally or intravenously in the 48 hours leading up to a race. Talk at the brief meeting turned to gambling and New York's burgeoning casino industry. Lego, Montrain, and Rivers are all on or ahead of construction schedules. Gaming rules on standards for testing and certifying video lottery gaming equipment were approved. Requirements for licensing gaming employees and vendors were clarified and simplified in a move to help people easily comprehend how those rules work. When the meeting adjourned, Gaming Commission members hopped aboard a CDTA bus to tour the Rivers construction site. Commission member John Puklemba.
We're here to take a look at the project, see how things are going, and to make sure that everyone here is living up to their commitment.
Greg Carlin is the CEO of Rush Gaming.
You know, we had a very mild winter up here, as all of you guys know, and that really helped as far as our schedule. We're a little bit ahead of construction schedule, and things are going well, so we're excited to take the tour today.
The media was not invited to join the tour, so a press conference was held on the grounds outside one of the construction trailers. Puklemba says regulations for the casino have been established and all games will be intently overseen.
We have our commission counsel here who has drafted the regulations. We've looked at regulations from every other state in the country, and we've proposed them everything from security to the types of games and how the games are going to be conducted, so that the regulations are extremely detailed. After we've gotten the comments from everyone that's concerned, we have promulgated final regulations. So just about every aspect of the activity will be very well regulated and then very well monitored once the casino is actually operating.
He added the board is pleased with the progress on casinos throughout the state.
We also went to see the operation at Montrain in Monticello in Sullivan County. And again, they're very far along, extensive renovations being done, tremendous amount of people working and being employed and on schedule to finish the project. As you know, it's a bigger project down in Sullivan County, so it's going to take longer.
Back along the Mohawk River, as construction nears the end at Rivers, General Manager Mary Cheeks told reporters new employees will be sent to dealer school for training,
which we anticipate starting on October 3rd. So after the dealer school's on way, we'll start rolling out all of our training. And our strategy is to train as many people as we can, and from there start the hiring process.
Cheeks expects just over 100 jobs will open initially. The casino is anticipating opening in early 2017. Media members were promised they'd get their own tour in the near future.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. It's an annual meeting that brings together government, institutional, environmental, and business advocates to find solutions to issues of common interest across the Adirondacks. The 10th Annual Common Ground Alliance meeting last week reviewed a number of issues that could help the economy and environment within the Blue Line. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
Over the past decade, stakeholders involved with the Common Ground Alliance have worked together to create a common agenda to solve issues facing the Adirondacks. A major initiative is the Adirondack Futures Project, a scenario-based plan to help direct policy for the next 25 years. Adirondack Futures co-director Dave Mason says the plan is on track and is fascinated how the meeting stimulates discussion on issues and the park's future.
There were many more local government people there this year than there have been. And its biggest impact is it gets these people in a room and they talk to each other about a topic of shared interest. It also brings in people who are not in the thick of this every day and bring creative, different ideas to the table because they're not wedded to some position they've been holding for years. So it's a way for the region to get new ideas into the mix that's valuable.
The meeting's theme was building blocks for Adirondack community success. Work group issues included streamlining the Adirondack Park Agency's process, leveraging economic investment by capitalizing on Adirondack resources, adaptation to climate change, the opioid addiction crisis, and women in Adirondack leadership positions. Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe spent his time in the APA workshop.
I brought with me a task force report from 1994. I referred to that in the workshop all throughout the day. And there were many times that issues were brought up where the answer to those issues was right in this task force report. So one of our recommendations was dust off that report, review it, look at what of the recommendations have been implemented and what ones have not been implemented, and should they be implemented, and if so, why, and if not, why not? So that was what I thought was the most important recommendation.
Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism President Jim McKenna facilitated the Economic Investment Workshop.
What was good about this discussion, we had town supervisors, we had environmental groups, we had small business, we had mid-sized business, and we had outdoor recreational providers, as well as the arts communities. If we're going to utilize growth in the park's economy, we have to, again, look at our communities and our hamlets in a way is that how do we revitalize them? So our discussion centered around coming up with very specific incentives that would drive private investment inside the Blue Line.
Nearly 200 people attended the meeting in Old Forge, including New York Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1631. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.